Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations with educational leaders and experts. My hope is to share with you not only valuable insights and knowledge from leaders in education, but have fun while doing it and shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. It takes a lot more work and planning to make a large wheel turn, more than a small one. And in Gwinnett County Schools, their team did just that. They've been working hard for these last few years making the wheel of school improvement turn with their strategic work with MTSS, and they're finally seeing the impact of their efforts. In this episode, I had the opportunity to chat with Dr. Tanisha Parker, Executive Director of Student Services, Dr. Debbie Durrance, Executive Director of Data Governance, and Elizabeth Moore, Director of Instructional Development and Support for Gwinnett County Schools, one of the largest school districts in the country. In our conversation, they share the process of bringing their teams together to truly make a difference for their students and how sometimes the MTSS process requires some unlearning before adding anything new. They also share their wisdom for those just beginning the process and about what their work looks like moving forward. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Today on the podcast, I am pleased to be joined by three people, which is a new thing for the podcast, but I have three ladies from Gwinnett County Public Schools here to chat about their work with MTSS in their school district and just more about what they've done to help support their students. And so we have today Dr. Tanisha Parker, who is the Executive Director of Student Services, Dr. Debbie Durrance, who's the Executive Director of Data Governance, and then Elizabeth Moore, who's the Director of Instructional Development and Support. Hopefully I said all of that correct. But they're from Gwinnett County Public Schools, kind of in the metro Atlanta area. And so they are here to tell us all about what is your secret to MTSS? What's your magic bullet, right? That's what everyone has one, right? So if you guys would just give me, maybe describe a little bit about your role. And if someone wants to kind of chime in about tell us a little bit about your school and or your school district, and then we'll kind of like dive into MTSS. So Dr. Tanisha, let's start with you.
Okay. Thank you so much for having us and having me here. My name is Tanisha Parker, and as you said, I am the Executive Director of Student Services. And so what that entails is pretty much all of the supports that will enable a student to be successful that aren't hardcore academic. So it's your counseling support. It's your social work support, behavior support, and the SEL development, all of those foundational things that need to be there for kids to be ripe and ready to receive education, as well as those additional services or supports when things outside of oftentimes our kids' circumstances are impeding their academic progress. We have personnel in place to remove those barriers and connect them with resources, whether they're internal inside of our district or outside of our district, which is what we would call wraparound service.
The data that we can use to make decisions for possible tier two needs or tier three needs for any academic concerns. And then we also kind of, because we're working with those teams, focus on not just the academic needs, but when do we need to pull in someone from Tanisha's team to be able to support a school or an individual student based on their needs. Because we know that although our goal is for our students to be college and career ready, if that whole child isn't being met, we're not going to get to the place that we want to be able to meet their needs. So that's a little bit.
Well, maybe I can throw this to whoever, but maybe would you describe a little bit about your school's kind of journey with MTSS? Because, you know, MTSS tends to be something that's more, I mean, probably in the last 10, 15 years become more prominent, you know, coming out of RTI. And so maybe describe a little bit about where, you know, it sounds like you're very cohesive now, but I imagine that maybe that wasn't always the case. Is that, maybe, I mean, I could be assuming wrong.
You are not assuming wrong at all. It's been quite a journey for us, and I'll start first and then you guys can kind of jump in. I began this role around 5 years ago, and the role kind of developed because of needs that we saw within the work of just RTI specifically. And when we were defining RTI in our county, we weren't just talking about academics, which I think sometimes when people hear RTI, they do think just academics, but we did have behavior and other things as well within our RTI processes, but it wasn't a streamlined, cohesive system that we had in our district. There was a lot of variability from our different schools. And so when I started this work, I really started bringing up MTSS. And so I think 5 years ago, Tanisha and I sat down together and I was like, hey, let me talk to you about this thing. And so we kind of have just been evolving from that point on. We're all doing the work, but we're doing the work in silos, even within our local schools. We're doing the work of whole child support, but not in a streamlined, systematic way, where we could be working a lot smarter and not harder. And so we had, I would say, the pieces, but we weren't doing it in a systematic, streamlined way. And I think in the last 2 years, we've really focused on how can we be more structured and systematic in this approach to make sure that each and every student is getting what they need to be successful. And I'll let my team jump in to say more.
So thanks, Elizabeth. And yes, Elizabeth certainly has been at the beginning and forefront of MTSS in our district. And when our district really start to embrace, and we've always been whole child, but when we really started to be about the business and be strategic and intentional about whole child support, we understood that there were some needs that weren't strictly academic that needed to be supported in some new and improved ways. And so that's when my teams really got pulled in. Now, mind you, we were here and we were supporting students, but as Elizabeth said, it wasn't always streamlined communication. There weren't processes in place. There wasn't procedures. There weren't tools for data collection and analyzing, which is going to pull me right into handing this over to Debbie in just a second. But we didn't have what we needed to, even when we decided, oh, yes, we need to be connected, let's start talking, we learned, oh, we're missing a really big piece. So we had Elizabeth's process on RTI, which was, it included some behavior, but it was really heavily academic. And then my team came in with the behavior supports and emotional supports, our social workers, our counselors, our behavior coaches, our SEL coaches, and started to do the work of that foundational skill development and elevated support needs when present in a student. But what we really decided is that it's not just about having conversations at the table, it's about having the appropriate data to have conversations around at the table. And so we had a new partner who also had already been doing amazing work in the district. It just wasn't connected. And so when Dr. Durrance came in, and I'm going to hand it over to Dr. Durrance, she was like the missing piece to the work that needed to be done. And that's the one message, whoever is listening, when you asked about a magic bullet or something like that, it's teamwork. Like that, that is that magic bullet. And Dr. Durrance, I'll let you talk about the data.
Absolutely. And I think that, thank you, Dr. Parker, for setting up the conversation so well. I think one of the things we recognized is that we were maybe unintentionally perpetuating the siloed work because we were capturing and leveraging data in different places. And so for us, we needed to decide as a district, how could we and how should we collect and consolidate and understand that full and complete picture of a student? We know that we don't have every piece to the puzzle, but how do we put more of those pieces together and move from black and white to full technicolor for our students to understand what their needs are and what strengths they bring to the table. And so we did significant work in really both training schools on what was already in their hands and also working with our partners to consolidate and have a place where they could see information about their school, about particular student groups, grade levels, subject areas, as well as individual students and everything I know about that student. So what do their academics look like? What do their assessment results look like? What does their attendance look like? What engagement have those students had with counselors, with social workers, with other support in the building? What has our contact been with those families? What have we seen that's worked with those students? And so our team has had the pleasure of partnering with Dr. Parker's team and Elizabeth Moore's team to really think about how do we continue to evolve and improve the tools and those structures that will provide efficiencies and support the work and not become an impediment to the work.
I really like what you said about how, you know, it's about bringing all of those pieces into like color, right? Like, you know, all the stuff is black and white and you bring it into sort of technicolor and it comes alive and it comes in a way like allows the teachers and the other decision makers within like a team of making decisions about students or even the student themselves to be able to like make decisions for academics or, you know, other supports that, you know, that student might need. And I think that you're right in the fact that teamwork like makes it all work together. But I think that it's about like bringing all the pieces to the table because, you know, that's the part of MTSS that I think is really magical, right? Like it's the idea that it isn't about those different silos, but about what happens when the team gets together and makes decisions or, you know, can help make plans for students. And so I appreciate your like analogy of like the technicolor. So, you know, I can imagine that maybe in all of the work that you're doing, there were some different obstacles and barriers along the way. What were some of those biggest kind of barriers that you had in creating the system and the teamwork that you're doing? I will see.
So I'm happy to start. So I think that anytime you have systems or structures that have been in place for a period of time, unlearning and relearning is always more challenging than learning. And so in some instances, we're reteaching and relearning together with our local school and district colleagues to think about approaching the work differently, using information in a different way. I'll use Dr. Parker's team as a great example. We heard a clarion call from our school leaders to say, we have to go to these separate different places to see what our counselors and social workers are engaged in and how they're supporting students. And it's really difficult to do that and then bring that information over to the other information that we know. So we very quickly had to provide deep training and support for her counselors and social workers to transition that work into the same tool so that they could also start to see more information about students. But whenever you introduce something new, it could be the most wonderful resource, tool, or practice that's ever been created. But new is hard and change is difficult. And so I think when you think about this work, you have to bring teams along with you. So going at the speed that they can go while also having that sense of urgency when you recognize gaps, that's a barrier that I think is present in every school district when they think about the work. And that's just one particular perspective when we think about tools and technology.
It's funny that you say that. I feel like that really resonated with me. Like it kind of gave an emotional response in me because I was like, yes, change is really hard. And, you know, I, as a former educator, there were years where we had all these changes and those kind of things, like were almost like, it was just hard work on top of the work of, you know, working with students. And so I think that that's something that's great that you recognize that. And it's like going at the pace of your team, because I think that we often leave educators behind when we try to push it too fast. And then you end up splitting the work, and it kind of causes more divide and then makes the work even harder. So I appreciated that you recognized that.
We tried really hard to not message it as a thing. And that was, I think, probably our biggest hurdle obstacle when we first started, that this isn't a thing. Like MTSS isn't like a thing that we're doing. It is our framework for school improvement. It is the work. It is all of the things. And so I think that was probably our biggest, one of our hurdles, because we're still dealing with this. We're wanting to put it in a box. We want MTSS to be for the, that's just for the kids that are struggling. And it's like, no. And I have positives to share about that too, of where we've come from there. But that it's not just a thing we do for students that are struggling, or a thing we do for our Title I schools, that it is the work of school improvement. And I would say that was probably one of my biggest barriers, only because originally I feel like our team was the face of RTI, which when a lot of people thought of RTI, it was only for, like, even though it wasn't, because there was Tier 1 always there too, but it was still like the face of, that's just what we do if a kid is struggling. I think that was probably one of our biggest hurdles, where messaging was so important in how we messaged everything. And Tanisha, I'll let you go now.
Yeah.
And I agree with what both of my colleagues have said, particularly around the messaging. And in my department, we had some additional challenges because we were growing in my department. We were adding new offices. And so really establishing and communicating what those offices would do for support was certainly something that we had to be really intentional about, particularly language. We have behavior specialists and we have behavior coaches. And what's the difference? And when do they come into this MTSS structure? And what we found is that there was some ambiguity around terminology, just in general around MTSS, that we had to clear up. And before we could clear up, we had to come together as a team and decide, okay, so what do we mean, you know, when we say this, or you know, how are we gonna communicate this out to the schools? Because some components of MTSS look very different in different schools. And as we came together as a district and wanted to develop a structure and framework, and again, as Dr. Duren said, we are extremely large. We are our largest school district. So it's not that one exact, you know, plan is going to work for all 142 of our schools, but we had to have a solid framework for those schools to work within. And so that has been a challenge. And I think we're still fleshing out and really solidifying what that will look like. But we're so much further along than where we were. And I think our schools have benefited and will continue to benefit from the model that we're trying to show in terms of that collaborative work. We co-create, we co-present, we're really trying hard to model, not to do things and not create district-wide things in isolation, because my work always impacts Elizabeth's work and we always need Dr. Durance's team on board. So we're really trying to model that co-creation and that co-facilitation of ideals at our school. So but that's different, and that's new, and it's a change for us.
Yeah. Well, and I think that you're right in that the message, like how you package it and how you message what you're trying to do, is so important. I think that's why one of the, you know, pillars of MTSS is communication. You know, it's all about how you present it, and the idea that it's a framework. I like that you said that, because it's something that everything else is underneath. It's not just like this one little silo of the thing that we do. Because that's the, you know, most educators will say, oh, it's just another thing. It's the same thing packaged, you know, in a different name and named something else. And so I imagine that goes, I appreciate that you guys are all sort of saying that, you know, this is ongoing work. It's not like you've finished, you've arrived. Cause I was kind of hoping that you're like, you've arrived, you figured it out, you're going to tell everybody else. But I appreciate that it's an ongoing process. It's continuing to evolve. So in that, I would love to hear some, if you have some stories of a school or students in particular that come to mind that have been really impacted by this MTSS work. Because I believe in the power of story, and that thing, that is what will continue to move us forward. So I would be curious to see if you hear some examples.
I'll start. I've got two big ones that I want to share. This is my favorite time of the year right now, as we are looking at end of the year data. We're looking at growth of where our students have come from. And my favorite is the smiling pictures of kids that I've been getting inundated with. And I can't even begin to share all of them, but it's just from, I had one principal send me a message the other day of a third grader who came to them at a kindergarten level in reading and in math, and is leaving third grade on grade level because they were able to utilize the data, figure out where those skill gaps were for a student, and provide them the right interventions. And so stories like that definitely fill my bucket, because it's showing me like we're doing it. I think on the flip side, we've qualified more students for gifted in 1 year than we ever have in this district. I think we're close to like 6,000 students. We qualified for gifted services at the middle and high school level. So students that before, when we didn't have universal screener data that we've ever used before, and now we're identifying students for gifted and opening up whole new doors and pathways for them and able to meet their needs, I think is huge. So like I said, I have tons of stories like that, but right now those are my two like biggest ones.
I've got goosebumps like that. Because I always like to think of the MTSS like it's like a diamond, not necessarily a triangle. Like it, you know, in the center is that tier one, but like enrichment and intensive support, you know, intensive enrichment and intensive support. So I like to think of it as a diamond. So I love hearing about that's amazing. Yeah. Dr. Tanisha, you look like you are on the edge. You have a story for us.
Yes, I too get really excited when I'm able to see like all of our work, and make no mistake about it, it is hard work. But when you start to see that our students are benefiting from it, so I've gotten emails, and typically when I am involved, it's a really significant need for a student, and I've sat in on district level meetings for a student, so that particular student was in real need of support from my teams. And one little girl, I think she's a fourth grader, she had some issues at school, and we were trying to keep her. She had actually changed to a new school, and we were trying to support her there. She was doing well academically, but socially and emotionally, she was really, we were really concerned about her. We were able to connect her through our processes. They met, we knew there were some struggles. We could pull up, we showed the mom how our counselor was meeting with her, how our social worker had met with her, and how we really were recommending that we pull in a wraparound service, and having conversations with mom, who at first was not necessarily on board, but we had data to show, you know, we've been doing what we can, but we think there's an elevated need here, and we want her to be okay. And mom said, okay, we got her a wraparound therapeutic counselor. And mom wrote an email back to the social worker that coordinated the support and service, and said that her daughter was doing great. She was loving school. She hadn't seen her daughter this happy. And it was both a great thing and a sad thing, because she said she hadn't seen her daughter this happy in a very long time. And her daughter's in fourth grade. And I'm thinking, kids should just be happy when they're in the fourth grade, right? So that was a real huge success story for us, as well as when some of our kids that maybe they have not made the best decisions. And so they were not in school, you know, they may have been in school suspension, or they may have been at alternative school, but they're coming back into their homeschool. And that process that we've built in place to have this supportive meeting, this restorative reentry meeting for them to really welcome them back and say, hey, you are not your mistake. You know, and we're going to help set you up for success this time around. I'm hearing kids be grateful that they didn't walk back into the building with like a stigma, and being surprised that, you know, the administrators and teachers we're wanting to sit around and talk about how we can help you as you transition back into school. And hearing the parents, you know, say some of those things, which that meeting is part of our new MTSS structure. Those things make me feel really good about our work, because I feel like our kids can understand, you know, that yes, we, even if I make a mistake, you know, I can be redeemed and I can go and make better decisions. And I'm going to have some adults in the building that are going to be on my team and help me do that.
That's really important. Like, I think kind of restorative mindset for those kids is so important, them coming back. And because then it also helps them feel like they belong and they're not, you know, ostracized for that one decision, because they're kids, they're learning. And I think that's really important. Didn't want to leave you out, Debbie. Do you have any stories that come to mind?
So I would actually step up and onto the balcony for just a moment. We have a few schools, and one in particular, I got to sit in a session at our most recent conference that Dr. Parker was sharing about last week. We have an opportunity for all of our leaders to come together to share great work that's happening in their buildings. And we had a couple of schools that talked about how they approached the work, and they have transformed their entire school community. I get goosebumps as I say it, where this is the work. It's grounded in their beliefs as a building, in their mission as a school. And you can see it in the way they approach each and every component of their school, from their schedule to the way in which they have teachers really working in their strengths to support students, and they can speak the language of the work. And so not only those bright spots that we get to hear about for the individual students, where we can see that very specific example in the life that's been changed, but seeing whole buildings that have transformed into places where they are focused on uniquely meeting those needs of each and every student.
That's great. Cause I do think like having that whole view, you know, when you were in a large district too, is really like as a school building, you know, when they're really in it and they're all working together towards that same goal, that is the magic, right? That is the magical thing to see, because it creates a place where people want to go work and students want to be. And so it creates that community that you're striving for. So that's really great. So I mean, you guys have so much wisdom and insight into this work because you've been doing it for a while. I would love for you to maybe share with our listeners maybe some nugget of insight that you would have for people who maybe are just beginning this work. Because I think that sometimes when you're in the beginning, it is almost, that's the part where you're kind of like, is this gonna, do I keep going? You know,
I would say, yeah, that beginning phase is either, you know, I'm going to stick it or I'm going to run from this. So that is a critical point. And I would say a couple of things. I would say one, and first and foremost, keep kids first, like absolutely keep kids first. Two, be assured in whatever your particular area of expertise is, be confident in that, but make room when you come to that table to hear other ideals. So that all of those areas of expertise can come together and create something beautiful. I think when you have very talented teams, and our teams here are extremely talented, and they are extremely gifted in the roles that they and we play, but not shrinking from that level of expertise, but understanding that when these superpowers, I guess, come together, that we have to make room for all of those, right? So we may have to step back sometimes, because really we need to hear, I need to hear more of Elizabeth's team, or we really need to let Dr. Durrance's team take the lead on this, because it really is more tool and technology focused. Or maybe it's someone from my team that really needs to be talking more or to the forefront of this particular conversation, because it's really more about, you know, our wellness of students and being willing to provide that space, but still bringing all of that expertise and confidence that you have in your skills, because that's needed. We just need to know when to lead and when to follow.
Mm-hmm. It's like a dance, kind of.
It's right? Like a dance.
So I would say one of the critical pieces that helps people come along in that journey is to focus on the why before the what and the how. But don't forget that as educators, we live and breathe in the how. And so making sure that you bring together why you're doing it, what you're doing it, and how you're going to do it. And that's really what the teams provide. That same work has to happen in a local school. So providing good, strong modeling of what that looks like and being open to also step into the work, try something, receive feedback. When we actually try it with students and people say, this was really great, this was not so much really great. And we think that perhaps there might be a better way, and leaning into the places where you have strength. We really anchored on tier one and tier three as areas where we knew we had to provide really deep support. And so in our journey, I think we're now transitioning to lean more into tier two with tools, with support, with strategies, because we recognize those students deeply in need. We need to make sure that we have support for, and every student needs tier one. So recognizing you can't do everything in one day, and taking those positive steps forward and celebrating those positive steps will help you to build that momentum to continue in the journey.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You can't do everything. I think that that's a motto. That's a motto for life in general. Just you can't do everything.
I refer to it a lot as spaghetti, because what we find a lot in this work is, like, I call them like spaghetti districts or spaghetti schools, where we're just going to throw 50 million things and see what sticks to the wall. And that's what we see a lot in this work. This sounds good. This sounds good. This sounds good. They're doing this. That sounds good. Let's do all the things. And I think going back to what both of my colleagues just said of knowing what the why is, what is your why? What is your focus going to be? And what's worked in the past? I think don't throw everything out with what the expertise is and what we know has been tried and true practices. I think are my two biggest things of, like, slow down. Yes, there are a lot of needs and we have a lot of work to do, but go slow to go fast in a lot of cases in this work, or else we drown and we're inundated and we're ineffectively implementing a whole lot of things. And so I think sometimes it's okay to, what have we identified as our need, and why have we identified that as our number one need? And then what are we going to do?
Recently, I read something about the power of subtracting and how really honing in on what's the most important things in the work of school improvement, and do those things really well, but don't be afraid to subtract stuff that isn't working. Like, not continue something just because that's what we've always done, you know, but taking that.
Yes.
Great thing. So I'm curious, I'm kind of moving forward. What are some of your goals, moving into this next year and the next 5 years that of the work? I mean, maybe you don't have to go 5 years, but like in the next few years, what are some goals that you're really hoping to move towards?
I would go back to something I mentioned previously, that really providing schools with ways in which they can track and understand the effectiveness of tier two support. I think that many school districts' tools and processes have given us ways to identify and track for progress tier three interventions, and to some extent tier two, but we know that it's not as systematic as we would like it to be. And we really don't have as much understanding at tier two because the groups of students are bigger. And so we're working with, you know, 10%, maybe 15% of our students. So how can we find efficiencies to be able to capture what's happening with those interventions so that we can understand what's most effective with different students in different areas of need and continue to grow that knowledge base. I know that's an area continuing to refine our tools in support of the work as we receive feedback, and continuing to have ways in which we can leverage our learning. So if we understand that students that have this particular type of need that have had this experience are really successful when we use this intervention, having more specificity in what we can provide to schools in their work so that their focus is truly on that engagement with students in the work.
I think my biggest thing that I'm most excited about as we're looking, we recently have adopted new high quality instructional materials at Tier 1, and we're really building the knowledge base with our teachers around the science of reading. And we're seeing already impacts that this is having on our students and their reading proficiency. And to piggyback off of what Debbie just said, I think, you know, when we know better, we do better. And a lot of times in the work of intervention, you know, when you walk into a master teacher's classroom, they are doing tons of interventions and things, not even knowing that that's what they're doing, but that's what that student needs. So that's what you do when a student is doing X, Y, or Z, whether it's behavior or academics. And I'm so excited as we're building more routines and more strategies that can really leverage the work at Tier 1, that teachers will say, oh, I know this, I know how to respond to this, or I know what's available, I know I can reach out to my social worker for this. Just building that capacity in our teachers and our schools to really be able to meet the needs. I think it's why we say, like, we believe we are constantly in this CQI process of continuously improving. And I think if the work is never done, there's always going to be a new challenge and a new thing. And the more that we can build a framework around how to look at data and respond and build a toolbox of expertise, I think the better. And so that's the part that gets me excited, where right now everything is new, where now we're going to build comfortability with certain things and have that expertise, I think is what I'm most excited for.
Yeah.
And I would share a similar excitement that Elizabeth shared around really moving to the next step. We introduced PBIS to all of our district. We introduced SEL strategies, signature set strategies to all of the district. We've introduced our restorative practice training to our leaders, and we'll be rolling out training next year. We have structures in our buildings already, whether it's advisement or SEL time at our local schools, that we want our schools to now start to see how all of these things come together. I think one of my colleagues said earlier, there have been a number of things that we've been introducing and we've been training and skilling up on last year. And it probably felt to our teachers, I have no doubt, like there were just a number of things. And now I think we're moving into helping them see the connection between those pieces, how SEL and restorative practices are embedded into your PBIS program, how you can leverage your advisement program with SEL lessons and restorative practice lessons to help build culture across your school. So that's what I'm most excited about. That's the work for next year.
I'm excited to see how that goes for you. And just, I know that all the work that you're doing is making difference in lives of students, like you shared. And really that's what is so key and important in keeping those students in the kind of the center of the work. So exciting to see all of that. So thank you so much for sharing just your district with me and just in our listeners and the work that you're doing. Because I know that could be really helpful for people who are in the work to hear those maybe a little bit further along of just like, hey, it is possible to work together to create a cohesive team. It is possible to see results from this. And so I just appreciate your time today. I like to kind of end our conversation on something kind of fun. And so the thing that I love asking about is maybe your, like a memory you have of your time in school, or even it could be as like, as an educator too. I think we all have so many different fun stories, but if there's like a fun memory or what was fun for you as a student.
I've got one.
Okay.
And maybe it was, a sign to what I would eventually end up being in my profession. But as a high school student, I was selected to be a peer mentor and mediator. And it was led by the school counseling department and the school counselor, who also happens to be the godmother of my children. Like my school counselor is the reason why I became a school counselor and moved on and into the positions. But we were trained on de-escalation. We were trained on mediation. And I got to help, peers. I think you had to be a junior or a senior. When I was a junior, so I did it for 2 years. And we got to help our peers, like, not get in real trouble, because they weren't in real trouble when they came to us. We were hoping that they weren't, I guess that was an MGSS structure back then. And they never called it that, of course. But we were there to help our peers navigate like a lot of the just drama that happens in high school. And so I loved being able to do that. So that's one of my fond, I guess, memory of high school.
You were doing the restorative circles, like student led, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Awesome. They didn't call it that, but yeah, it was.
So I was the student getting assigned to Nisha to be my peer mentor. and so my saving grace, I always made great grades and always had a priority of I had to do well in school because I knew that this wasn't the end, but made terrible life choices all through middle and high school. But I think my saving grace was the fine arts programs that I was a part of all through middle and high school. It gave me tons of opportunities. I got to travel all over the place. And that was always my saving grace through the mentors and the teachers who saw potential in me and pushed me without turning me off completely, because I would not come to school if that were the case. And so I think the fine arts programs really are what kept me together. And so it's something that I really pay attention to when we think about whole child and, that the academics are a piece, but the fine arts are also a huge piece of what support our students, because it's what helped me. So I think that's probably my biggest one.
That's amazing.
And so Elizabeth and I share a fine arts love. As a elementary school student, I have a memory of being asked to explain something to like three classes of students and running from the room because I just could not bring myself to stand up in front of a group and explain something. And then when I was in late elementary school, early middle school, I found music. And for me, that became that island of competency that built confidence in me and was transformative in my life. I started marching in a high school marching band in the seventh grade, marched all through high school, had the great opportunity to continue that when I attended college. And it helped build relationships and support structures that through all the ups and downs and the choices that we make as we travel through life, that supported me. And then I've had the wonderful opportunity to have a child who also had a fine arts love and see how people have just poured into her, not just in math and language arts, but in addition to math and language arts and social studies and science and all the other courses. So I would say, I think that's part of what also anchors me is remembering that each student has a passion and a joy, and we just have to unlock that for them and help them find their pathway for success.
Thank you so much for sharing. I am as well a former fine arts student. I was in theater and you know, when I was taught, I did a theater club for middle school, which was chaos, but still fun. And so I have such a passion for that. And I think that that is so, so important for kids. And the arts are a great place to for them to land and discover things about themselves. And I love what you said about the mentorship that happens in that space. Whether it be, and I say sports and elective classes in general are a great place for students to be cared for in the kind of, I feel like that should be under the MTSS umbrella. There's not necessarily a category for that yet, but I think it qualifies in that way. Thank you so much, ladies, for being with me today and just talking through your MTSS work. Great things are happening clearly in Gwinnett County, and you guys are definitely making a huge impact. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to hear all our future episodes. As well, if you're enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and let us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn @branchingminds.